Support comes from the Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center, James Cancer Hospital, and Solove Research Institute. Just as no two people are exactly the same, neither are their cancers. At the OSU CCC James, there is no routine cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance, a tag that denotes conscientious investing and has been a hallmark of finance since the 1960s. In early March, the Senate voted to overturn a Labor Department rule that permits retirement fund managers to consider ESG. President Joe Biden has vowed to veto the bill if it comes to his desk. Avery Elfelt is a reporter with E&E News, which covers energy, environmental policy, climate change, markets, and science. Avery Elfelt, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Why and when did ESG become a thing in investing?
Yeah, so it's been around for quite a while. I would say most people would pinpoint kind of early 2000s as the initial point. And what it really is an effort to kind of complicate the investment process, you could say, by considering a wider range of risks. So think climate change or the clean energy transition or extreme weather events. But at the time, that idea wasn't very popular. So some folks at the UN basically set out to make the case to major pension funds and other investors that, you know, alongside companies' revenue and general management, we should be looking at things like gender diversity and climate change and environmental performance, generally speaking, you know, as you make these decisions, because eventually those issues could come back to in essence, kind of hurt returns. So that was in the early 2000s, and it took a long time for that idea to kind of catch fire. But today it's, you know, not only super prominent throughout the financial system, but also in financial regulation. And that has kind of, you know, put it on this path toward being a more controversial topic as it's, you know, risen in prominence.
What do you mean by could come back to hurt returns? What's that referring to?
Sure. So if you think about climate change, for instance, is kind of one of the most common examples. If you have a company that has a lot of real estate investments on in the Southeast, on the coast, or in, you know, in Florida, or really anywhere along the East Coast, if you have a bunch of investments there, and those investments are increasingly at risk of flooding and hurricanes, sea level rise and things like that, but you're not kind of adjusting your portfolio to consider that risk, eventually those investments could be literally and financially underwater.
So ESG isn't just a company making itself appealing by investing or having policies that address sustainability and gender and diversity and that kind of a thing, but it's also the process of fund managers looking ahead and figuring out which among the companies out there are addressing these future issues now.
I think, yeah, that's a general idea. I think there's certainly parts of it that are about appearance and reputation, right? And having your sustainability report look good. But I think at the same time, major investors are really starting to think about like how these issues are changing and how they can start to have major financial impacts and like what ways are out there to kind of anticipate those and be more forward-looking as they manage lots of money.
How much is ESG investing worth now? Is there any way to, you know?
So there are different estimates out there. I've seen some, they really vary quite a bit depending on, are you looking at kind of just US or are you looking internationally? But most folks will say in the trillions. I saw a number this year that said 8.4 trillion in US investment assets at the beginning of 2022.
And this is a worldwide phenomenon. I mean, in Western industrialized countries, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So it's, yeah, definitely kind of caught fire across US and Europe, and I'm sure beyond there too.
The Senate's passed this bill. It included two conservative Democrats across the aisle on this one. First blush seems like a bipartisan bill, but not really. How is the House expected to respond to this?
So I'm As far as I'm aware, it's actually been passed in both chambers.
Oh, it has. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's been passed in both chambers. The House actually passed it first, and then the Senate was waiting to see if they would have those votes from Manchin and or Senator Manchin and Senator Tester, I believe, were the
right,
two.
Right, John Tester of Montana, right.
Yes, and yeah, so they've both passed it, and basically it's kind of trying to, you know, make it harder for pension plan managers and retirement plan managers to consider these issues, the environment and social issues, while investing. President Biden has said he will veto it. So it's not expected to go anywhere, but people have said it's pretty notable that his first veto would be about something as niche and complicated as, you know, sustainability and financial risk.
Why do we reduce it to sustainability and financial risk? I mean, I hear that and I see that it's a lot of sustainability issues, but you mentioned gender diversity at the beginning when you were talking about, you know, used to look at just revenue and general management, now gender diversity, climate change, you know, all the kind of, and whether or not companies are addressing those kinds of issues. And gender diversity has been shown in study after study to be a very positive thing for the bottom line for any company. It would be in any other way of good investment if there are more, I'm assuming, women at the top.
Sure. So is your question kind of?
Well, just that, why is that considered debatable? It seems to me,
yeah,
you know, it's
like, yeah, I think that's a good question. No, I think, I mean, really, I think it's all like all of these issues have kind of been lumped into this category that we're seeing kind of across the board in headlines of like a woke issue, right? So kind of a progressive or left-leaning issue, whether that's LGBTQ rights or racial and ethnic diversity, gender diversity, climate change. It's all kind of being lumped into this one category of things that, you know, I guess Republicans are casting as progressive or woke. And so I think everything falls into that category. And the main concern you'll kind of hear is that whether it's a major bank or investment manager or a financial regulator like the Federal Reserve, the concern is that they're starting to put these quote unquote woke issues ahead of finance and ahead of financial returns and profit and managing risk. What the other side, you know, folks who think these issues are important would say is, no, we're doing our job by considering issues like this, because as you said, having a more diverse boardroom is shown to, you know, not only boost profits, but just create a more sustainable organization long term, you know, especially as people are starting to advocate for themselves more and going to organizations that really will, you know, be inclusive and where they can excel. So it's also a risk management issue, because if you're not, you know, treating your workers or employees well, that could come back to bite you via a lawsuit or something else.
Or labor shortage or whatnot. There are different takes on why ESG should be scrutinized. Let's start with the idea that it just isn't a very good prospect. Is there evidence that ESG embracing companies do less well, are less viable?
So that's a tricky question. I think what I heard from experts most recently is there's no evidence that ESG, or very little evidence that, like, over the long term, ESG will be negative for your returns. I think there's also a question as to, you know, how much could ESG really boost returns. I don't think anyone is necessarily out there saying, like, at least right now, saying, you know, if you're doing ESG investment, you're going to make way more than some other firm in the short term. Mm-hmm. I think really it's a long-term strategy, right? Because lots of these issues like climate change, for instance, the risks from that are already manifesting, but could take decades to fully hit. So it's really kind of, you know, if you look at the last year or 2 years, you might be able to take like a tech company, for instance, that is very ESG friendly, but has struggled during, like, amid record high inflation and all of these other issues. And then you could say, you know, all these ESG companies aren't doing well, or ESG leaning companies aren't doing well. But really, that's because of the current economic situation. Long-term proponents would say, you know, that they could still outperform because they're thinking about the long-term sustainability of the the organization.
And Republicans say that ESG investing is part of a so-called, as you refer to it, woke capitalism, wherein corporations and investment firms are taken in by liberal political influence. Is the idea when companies invest in ESG practices, are they doing it to get more investment in them, or are they, or is that another tricky question?
Also a tricky question. I would say, like, in terms of, I mean, yeah, I think if you, let's say you're a major financial firm and you manage people's money for them, if you have ESG strategies, I mean, it's certainly a money-making issue, right? I mean,
well, if you're broadcasting them and putting them out there, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that whether that's like a financial firm trying to draw more clients or a tech company or a fashion company, right, trying to draw people in because they say they care about these issues, I think that the marketing component is certainly there and I think is worthy of scrutiny. And really, it gets scrutiny from both sides. It's not as though Democrats or even common advocates mm-hmm. are fully pro ESG. I think everyone kind of acknowledges that there are some issues worth working out.
You said, some advocates of ESG also question and scrutinize it. So what are they looking at?
Yeah, so they're really looking at, I mean, a lot of different things. I think one of the main concerns is that the kind of label or acronym can be used as a marketing device that, like, most consumers don't understand, and that, you know, slapping that label onto something could make someone think, oh, this is a green fund, or oh, I'm going to be fighting climate change if I invest my 401k into this fund, when really it's just, you know, slightly tilted toward companies that are, you know, maybe better on a few of these many, many issues that are kind of wrapped into the acronym. So they kind of are thinking about the integrity of those funds, things along those lines, and just the worry that companies generally could use this acronym as a way to kind of continue operating as usual and not really making substantive change, whether it's related to climate or other issues. So I think greenwashing, I would say, is kind of the biggest concern.
And there's no regulation. I mean, there's no one out there necessarily checking the facts and figures and making sure they, because there's no particular, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no particular standard for all of this, right?
Right. Yeah. And actually, so that's something that the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, has started to look at. They put out two kind of rules. The timeline is escaping me, but a while back, and my understanding is they've already had the comment period and are, you know, we probably won't see a final rule on that for a while. But basically, SEC Chair Gensler has said, you know, this is marketing, you know, like you go into a grocery store and he'll give the analogy of, and you see that something's low fat, right? The company has to describe why and provide the science behind it. They're kind of hoping to do something similar with ESG and, you know, put some guardrails basically around, like, what can be called this, how you have to justify it and explain it, and things like that. So I think that we'll probably see that at some point, but the SEC is working on another climate-related rule that I believe will come first.
And then it's important to understand, I think, that what the Senate voted on and what and the Senate and the House and what will be headed to Biden's desk eventually is not eliminating ESG, but banning pension funds from investing. Why pension funds?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because, I mean, my sense is that, like, the concern, or what they say that they're concerned about, is that, like, retirees, right, who just, you know, are trying to retire and have a living or have enough funds to do that, that their futures are kind of being put at risk.
Well, that's what I wondered about the evidence. Is there evidence that pension funds have been disproportionately hurt or anything by ESG investing?
Not that I'm aware of. I think lots of pension funds will use investment managers like BlackRock and, like, some of these other funds that have, you know, again, leaned into the ESG issue. And so the concern, not only just with that legislation, but around the country now, legislation has popped up trying to ban state entities from, you know, considering ESG and working with financial firms that consider ESG. And now we're actually seeing evidence on the contrary, that once you start kind of limiting the pool of finance firms you can work with, that actually comes at a cost to retirees, or could in the long term.
And how are finance firms, how are the funds responding to this backlash?
Yeah, that's a good question, and kind of one that I think is still unfolding a little bit. We've definitely seen, you know, I think prior to the Biden administration, I would say lots of these firms were really leaning into this, I think, because they knew it was what the public was interested in, and there was pressure from the advocacy community. And now I guess I would say I've observed kind of a pull back to some extent, and an effort to kind of cater to both sides of this, because as much as they're getting pressure from Republicans to kind of not be talking about climate risk and all of these issues, they're still getting pressure from Democrats and climate advocates to be doing it. So you'll kind of see a major CEO say, don't worry, we're like still investing in oil and gas, and that's not going to change. We're going to need it for a long time. And they'll turn around the next week and talk about how big of a risk climate change is. So I think, I mean, it's an interesting and tough spot to be in, because their job is really to deal with the economy as is, and the economy as we have it now is one in transition, right? So both of those realities exist.
Fossil fuels, to wit, oil and gas, are kind of at the heart of this issue. I mean, it's not a coincidence that Joe Manchin of West Virginia and what's his name from Montana?
Tester.
John Tester from Montana are both from big mining states. And conservatives, and they're both Democrats and conservative, right-leaning states as well. But to what extent is this an effort to protect fossil fuel investment?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, some of the things that are going on behind the scenes, right? So it's not as clear, really. But I think there has been a good bit of reporting about kind of outside groups that are, you know, kind of laying on to these politicians to be super vocal about ESG, and some reporting that does connect this to industry, right, to the oil and gas industry.
Okay, go on. I just want to ask you, is there evidence that the oil and gas industry, that fossil fuels have been hurt by the growing interest in ESG?
I think, yes. I mean, I think to some extent, yes. I off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I think more I would maybe point you to like coal, for instance, right, which we know is, you know, further along in the energy transition than oil and gas, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's already, you know, gone down quite a bit in value, but that's a good example of, you know, and that was happening way before ESG really took off. But I think that's because before there was ESG, it was just, you know, investors started to realize that this isn't a viable sector of the economy for much longer, and we're going to start shifting our portfolios accordingly. So I think, you know, that's probably starting to happen in oil and gas, to the extent I'm not totally sure, but I think, you know, the idea is that, you know, give it 5, 10, 15 years and the same could be happening there. And so really it's investors having an eye to the future and saying, you know, we have to protect our own returns. And if this industry won't be viable down the line, that's something we have to account for.
Avery Elfelt, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Avery Elfelt is a reporter with E&E News. That's a news organization covering energy, environmental policy, climate change, markets, and science. We'll be right back. Continue our conversation. So if you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you have a strong feeling, if you care about where your investments go, whether it's to ESG operations or the alternative, let us know. 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast White Lies.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance, a tag that denotes conscientious investing and has been a hallmark of finance since the 1960s. It got a big boost in the early 2000s. Companies around the world now factor in environmental and social strategies in making their appeal to investors. Congressional Republicans and others are calling the longtime practice, quote unquote, woke investing, and want money managers to stop considering ESG when investing their client funds. Especially, there's particularly a bill moving through Congress headed to the president's desk that would ban pension fund managers from investing on the basis of ESG. Ohio State Law Professor Paul Rose is Associate Dean for Strategic Initiatives. He's a professor. He helps lead OSU's Sustainable Finance Research Group. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, all right, tell me about the Sustainable Finance Research Group and what it does and why it relates to this.
Well, so it's run out of the Sustainability Institute here at Ohio State, which is, it does many things, but among the things that it does is it has a bunch of research groups where folks that are interested in different areas of sustainability, say water conservation or what have you, can get together across colleges to share research, think of ways that they might impact policy. So the area that I work with is sustainable finance. And so we have scholars from the business school, from engineering, from the Glenn College. We talk through our research. We think of ways that we might get the word out about our research and what the university is doing.
What kind of things do you study in regards to sustainable finance?
Well, exactly the kinds of things that you're talking about today, for example, right? Well, think of it in my area where I'm a law professor. I'm thinking about the regulations surrounding sustainable investing. I'm thinking about how ESG makes its way into disclosures that public companies might provide, how the Securities and Exchange Commission might regulate sustainability labels. And then other researchers are actually thinking about maybe the ways that companies might get money for sustainability projects through green bonds, for example, or through disclosure initiatives, things like that, that relate to sustainable investing across all those different areas.
I asked a lot of questions in the last segment about evidence. Mm-hmm. Where's the evidence that ESG is a good thing to do? Where's the evidence that it's not a good thing to do?
Yeah.
It sounds like there's evidence that it's a good thing to do, but there's not a lot of evidence that it's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So this has been one of the most widely and deeply researched areas in finance over the last 10 years. So from 2015 to 2020 alone, there were about 1,200 papers written just on this topic. And then there are about two dozen meta-studies where those are just studies looking at studies.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of academics writing papers looking at this question about whether ESG matters. So if you look at all of that evidence, it seems to suggest that ESG might matter a bit. There's not evidence to suggest that it really is harmful.
And when we're talking about helps a bit or harmful,
yeah,
we're talking about actually the act of investing and whether or not it generates revenue for the investor.
Right. So you can
earnings
look at it
for the investor,
right.
I should say.
You can look at it in different ways. You can look at it as in profitability measures. So if a company thinks about ESG initiatives, for example, are they going to be more profitable than another company that doesn't? You might look at it from the perspective of funds that try to target companies that do that. Are those funds more profitable mm-hmm. than other funds that don't look at it? So on balance, the evidence suggests that there's a little bit of a benefit from ESG investing. It's not a significant benefit. You can see why that might happen, though, and why you might never see a big benefit from ESG investing. And the reason why is that if a company is really savvy about thinking about, say, climate risk, and they're able to price in that climate risk effectively, then they've developed a strategy that is going to result in better performance. Their stock price will go up. So if their stock price goes up, then the returns from that stock investment are going to go down. There's going to be fewer returns to get. Mm-hmm. So there's this sort of, I don't want to say victim of its own success kind of dynamic that goes on. That's not really the right term. But the idea is that, of course, if something is shown to be beneficial, then other companies are going to follow that and do that. And so you're probably not going to see a big shift in the profitability of ESG-related initiatives.
What do the studies tell us about who wants to invest in this?
Yeah.
And why?
Well,
is it just about the money?
No, it's actually not. In fact, there are some generational components to this. I would say that older generations tend to be more what we might call classically profit-oriented, meaning that they want to get the maximum return that they can on their investment. And so to the extent that they are interested in ESG-related issues, they tend to be interested in the sense that ESG might result in better performance for them. Mm-hmm. Younger generations, millennials, Gen Zs, they actually are starting to invest really with the idea that they want their money to be invested for things that produce what are called collateral benefits from ESG. So not just a better return, but also making the world a more just place, dealing with issues of equity, for example. So they're willing to forego a little bit of return maybe in order to put their money in something that they believe in.
We got a question from Dan in Columbus that kind of goes to that. Hi, Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. I've heard about the evidence financially one way or the other, but I'm wondering about what evidence is there that investing in these funds or firms will be better in the long run for the environment or for other factors?
Yeah, I'm curious about that too, but you said the real studies, the bulk of the studies have been just over the past 10 years, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering, what can that tell us when it comes to the environment?
Yeah, probably not much. In response to Dan's question, I think that we don't really know yet what kind of effects this will happen. And as Avery said in the last segment, I do think that there's a risk of greenwashing. And I think that companies will recognize that if they can talk up their ESG strategies, they may be able to woo over investors that otherwise would not have invested with them. They may be able to be part of a mutual fund or exchange-traded fund that focuses on those kinds of companies, and so they can be part of some index or something like that. And whether that actually results in better changes, better performance when we're thinking about the environment, right?
Yeah.
So they're polluting less, they're reducing their emissions. I think that that's less clear, and again, there's a lot of suspicion.
Well, right, because now we don't know if they're just talking the talk and not walking the walk.
Yes. Yeah. And as Avery said, the SEC is focused on this.
Right.
They realize that there are two kinds of problems. One is that we don't really even know what these terms mean. So people are using terms like sustainability,
right,
green. And what does that even mean? And if you ask different folks, you'll get different answers. The Europeans are a little bit ahead of us in trying to develop a taxonomy, as they call it, where they're going to actually put real hard definitions on those terms. The SEC is moving towards something like that, I think, as well. But the other problem the SEC has is just, you know, do they have the enforcement capabilities of going after all these folks that might be engaged in greenwashing? And I think that they're trying to signal to the market that they're looking at this, they're watching this, and they're hoping that people will fall in line. But it is a real risk.
Well, hypothetically, if the president signed the bill into law, which he has vowed to veto.
He will, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But even if it went into law, how would you regulate something like that? How could you force people to not pay attention to something like that?
Well,
if it matters to them.
Yeah. So the the bill actually is, it's been quite politicized. I mean, it really is. It's if you look at what the bill actually does and the difference in the regulations from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, they're really not that big of a deal. So, I hesitate in saying that, and that might not comport with what some listeners, I'm sure, have read in the news. But if you actually look at the language of those rules and how they change from the Trump administration to the Biden administration.
The SEC rules or what's in the bill?
What's in the Department of Labor regulations that Biden wants to. The Department of Labor put in place these regulations. Congress is telling them you can't do that. And then Biden is going to veto Congress telling them they can't do that. So what the bill actually does is really not that different from what the Trump administration did. It actually still focuses those pension fund managers on getting the best return. They're really focused on return, and they're only looking at ESG to the extent that ESG is going to improve returns.
Because they have a fiduciary responsibility.
Exactly.
They would be, you know, guilty of malfeasance if they didn't.
Exactly. Okay. It would not be prudent to consider issues that relate to returns that deal with climate change, for example, climate risk. So
alone, without having there be a benefit. Okay.
Right. So the one thing that the Biden rule does is I think it removes a little bit of ambiguity related to what kinds of things pension fund managers could look at. I think that they were a little bit worried that they were violating their fiduciary duties by looking at ESG-related issues, even if they were going to produce a benefit. So this rule helps remove that uncertainty for pension managers. So, you know, again, I don't think it's a huge change, but it is a change.
But how would... Okay, so... The bill that Biden is going to veto would eliminate that ESG as an option?
Well, no, it's never not been an option, even
exactly.
under the Trump administration.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the Biden bill basically clarifies that you can consider ESG so long as it's going to the returns that the fund is able to achieve. What you can't do and what you've never been able to do under ERISA, the rule that the set of statutes that the Department of Labor rules work with or help define, under ERISA, you've never been able to go and try to get collateral benefits for the environment or whatever issue that you're looking at, something that doesn't relate to returns. You've never been able to do that. That's true under the Trump rules. It's also true under the Biden rules. So the Biden rule just simply kind of clarifies that, yes, you can look at ESG. You could under the Trump rules, but it was a little less certain whether you could do that. Now it's a little more certain that ESG can really be part of a strategy of prudent investment where you can consider what climate-related risks, for example, might do to returns.
In your work, in all the discussions you're having leading the OSU Sustainable Finance Research Group, I'm wondering why sustainability has become the focus of this ESG criticism, because there's lots of other things involved in ESG besides whether or not you endorse the fossil fuels industry.
Right. Yeah. And I think that I can just speak to what lawyers are doing that work on these issues. For lawyers, it can be a little bit frustrating because you're trying to separate out the E and the S and the G. And we do lump them all together, but they actually do quite different things. You can imagine that a lot of governance issues are quite tied to long-term returns, for example, how the company is run is a governance issue, right? Mm-hmm. Environmental issues can be as well. Social issues also can be, depending on what your consumer preferences are.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Yeah. Okay. So those issues can definitely be impacted. I think that part of what we're trying to do with our research group is help figure out, well, what is it that we're actually talking about? We're trying to isolate questions and think about ways that we can research those questions to get answers for people who are trying to create policy on these issues.
Outside of the fossil fuels industry, which I kind of know where they're coming from, mm-hmm. I think everybody does, and it's understandable. How has the larger free market, such as it is in the U.S., embraced ESG? Is it something they argue over? Is it something they've had to fight for? Is it something they do because it looks good, the greenwashing part of
it?
Or is there a true embrace of it?
I think that the answer is really, really mixed in that it does depend a lot on the company.
Okay.
It depends on who the CEO is. It depends on who the board is. I think that some companies are absolutely true believers, meaning that the board and the executives really do believe that managing the company in a sustainable way is the right thing to do.
It's part of their culture.
It is part of their culture, exactly. I think that there are some reluctant ESG participants that worry that maybe consumer preferences are shifting so that they need to respond to those consumer preferences.
Right. So that we're getting down to that sustainability thing, but they wouldn't admit that they're reluctant when it comes to policies against sexual harassment in the workplace.
Right. No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. Okay. So, but on some issues, I think that they're definitely trying to take the pulse of their consumer, and they're trying to respond to that, as you'd expect them to do as good managers. I mean, they're trying to sell products and operate in a marketplace where consumer preferences can change. And certainly it's true that anything with the green label is meaningful to consumers. In fact, there are studies that show that consumers will pay more for products that are labeled green. And interestingly, they also expect less of those products. They're willing to forego a little bit of quality for a green product. So it is showing up in consumer preferences as well.
Well, Paul Rose, I've kept you over time. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Paul Rose is an Ohio State law professor. He's associate dean for strategic initiatives, and he helps lead OSU's sustainable finance research group. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Heritage Foundation and why they support efforts to limit investment managers and prioritizing policies over client benefits. We'll talk about that. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast White Lies.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance, a tag that denotes conscientious investing and has been a hallmark of finance since the 1960s and especially since the early 2000s. ESG investing allows firms to consider other factors besides profits, such as sustainability and equity and inclusion, which has lessened investment in some major industries, such as fossil fuels. Opponents of ESG claim the practice compels investment managers to prioritize liberal policies over the client benefit. Joel Griffith is research fellow specializing in financial regulations at the Thomas A. Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. That's a conservative think tank in Washington, D.C. Joel, welcome to All Sides.
Hey, really happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Ann.
You bet. A colleague of yours at the Heritage Foundation, Andrew Olivastro, called ESG, quote, a direct assault on the heart and soul of a free market economy. Is that where you stand on this?
Yes, I'm in full agreement with my colleague, Andy. And I think over the past few days, ESG has come to the forefront even more in relation to the banks that went under. I was taking a look, for instance, at SBNY, the bank that was taken over by the FDIC this past week, looking at their social impact report from a few years ago. And here's where ESG came really into the mix there with SBNY Bank. The bank said that they would not make investments in companies that had a negative impact on society. And the bank then went on to list the companies that they would not invest in. It listed companies that were focused on fossil fuel extraction. Those are the companies that make our energy affordable. The bank said they would not make loans to private prisons. And of course, those private prisons make our criminal justice system more affordable and keep dangerous criminals off the street. And thirdly, SBNY Bank, in conjunction with their ESG policy, said they would not make investments in companies that were producing armaments. Armaments meaning the weapons that we need as a nation to defend ourselves against hostile foreign powers. So that's just one example of ESG and how it is a threat to the heart and soul of our country. And that's besides all the negative economic impacts that result from it.
All right. But if that's how they feel about this stuff, and they make it public, isn't that part of a free market economy to have the freedom to say, we're not going to invest in this, and you have a choice about whether you want to bank with us?
Well, when it comes to investment managers have a fiduciary duty, to the shareholders to maximize profits. So when you or I put resources into, whether it's a public pension fund or if we're in the private sector, into mutual funds, those investment managers must be focused on maximizing profits, not on furthering a political cause. And that's very important to all of us, because look, you mentioned ESG goes back decades, even though it's gained more popularity the last few years. If you look at the tens of thousands of mutual funds that we have in this country, studies are conclusively showing that those mutual funds that are invested according to ESG prerogatives, they are underperforming non-ESG funds each and every time. And here's the catch on this. The typical fees on an ESG fund, they're actually 40% higher than those funds that are not pursuing those ESG objectives. So yes, this is a moral issue. It also is an economic issue. It's harming a lot of middle-class Americans.
Both OSU Law Professor Paul Rose and my other guest, Avery Elfelt from E&E News, said that it's not that the studies are inconclusive, that it's not completely, that there are other funds that subscribe to ESG that do fine. It's not a uniform, I mean, you can cherry pick and find, but the studies show that across the board, they do as well as or slightly better than their counterparts.
Yeah, well, that's simply untrue. We have conclusive evidence that show that ESG funds are underperforming. And look, it makes sense that they're underperforming. When you're refusing to invest, for instance, in energy companies, when energy companies are so vital to our economic future, and they're going to be vital to the world's economic future for decades to come. I'm talking about oil and natural gas in particular. If you're refusing to invest in those companies, even if the returns are there, even if there's proven reserves and you know that those reserves are there for decades to come, of course you're going to underperform. And if you look at some of these companies, and I'll reference again these banks that went on. Look at Silicon Valley Bank, for instance, whose managers were focused on ESG rather than on risk compliance. These were, and they went belly up. And part of the reason why they went belly up is they neglected to focus on maximizing shareholder return. Instead, they were pursuing all of these woke objectives and they got their eye off the ball.
Some people think that investing in long-term strategies to reduce dependence on fossil fuels is a good investment long-term because they are depletable. They won't be around forever, no matter what. Is that what you call woke?
Well, woke is in reference to trying to cajole our private sector system into pursuing left-wing economic objectives such as wealth redistribution or left-wing energy objectives such as putting us onto this net zero carbon emissions plan that would be of detriment to the both people here, but also people that are trying to escape from poverty across the world. And what you see with ESG, when you see these management teams, for instance, if you look at what's going on with some of the energy companies, activist investors on the left are getting involved in proxy battles with shareholder resolutions. And they're trying to force companies like ConocoPhillips or ExxonMobil or BP. They're trying to move them away from their proven income stream. and fossil fuels and trying to prematurely divest them from those sectors, prematurely, when the profit is still there to be made. And they're doing this in a way that they know would not be possible legislatively right now. You know, if you ask the typical person, the polling data has actually been done, ask them, how much are you willing in your family to contribute every month economically in order to make us to reduce our carbon emissions? And the threshold's about $10 a month. Once you get past $10 a month, the typical family says, no, we don't want any part of that. So these left-wing activists know that they can't push through their agenda to divest us from fossil fuels, to get us away from those affordable energy sources. They know they can't do it through the democratic process right now. And so they're going through the back door and they're using these resolutions, these shareholder resolutions, to do what they can't do democratically. And this is a breach of fiduciary duty, because those board members owe an obligation to their shareholders to maximize profits. And instead, they are succumbing to this left-wing assault that would actually erode their profits longer term.
What would be the democratic process in this case? These are private companies. These are companies. They're not government.
Well, these are companies that are publicly traded.
Yeah.
And a publicly traded company, when you're a board member or if you're an investment manager, we have safeguards in place to ensure that if we invest our resources in a publicly traded company, or if we hire an investment manager to manage our retirement portfolios, we have, thankfully, the rule of law that says they need to be looking out for our interests. If you're an investment manager, let's say you're managing $100 million worth of assets from 10,000 families across your community. You can have your own political opinions, but what you don't have the right to do, absent the approval of the people you're managing the money for, you do not have the right to use their investment dollars to pursue your own political objectives. That's a violation of the law, and it's happening now each and every day.
And you said that phrase, absent the approval of the people you're investing for. And I want to just go to a caller, Mac in Columbus. That's who you are, right, Mac?
Yes.
Okay.
I have my funds in both.
You got to turn off the radio, Mac.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that.
That's okay. So tell me.
Yes.
We're running out of time. I just wanted to squeeze
again,
you in.
Yep. I have funds in regular. I have funds in socially responsible. And they're maybe performed not quite as well as some of the other funds, but I made that choice. I wanted my money to do good in the world. And there are things that I believe in. I wanted that money to be invested in those companies. I don't want that to be illegal. As a matter of fact, I wish there was more of that.
Okay. So what about folks like Mac, Paul Rose? I'm sorry, not Paul Rose, Joel Griffith. Sorry.
Yeah, that's an important question. Thank you for that question, Mac. Yeah, I think it's important that when we're talking about ensuring that investment managers make investment decisions based on maximizing shareholder returns rather than on advancing political causes, you still have the right and should have the right as a private investor, if you want to put your money in a fund that expressly says we are going to place these other interests above maximizing shareholder value, so long as that's fully disclosed, so long as you willingly make that decision, that is absolutely okay. Just as you have the right to take your money right now, you could take it out and you could blow it on $10,000 worth of lottery tickets or on the blackjack tables at your local casino.
Or on a company that invests in ways that I approve of.
Yeah. What we're talking about in pushing back against these ESG proposals is when we're talking about a traditional mutual fund or investment manager that is supposed to be operating according to your best interests at heart in terms of ensuring that they're going to maximize future profits. For those individuals, they must abide by that investment mandate. They cannot just go off on their own political path, whether it's on the right or on the left. But unfortunately, right now, we see this primarily happening on the left through ESG.
And just real quick, Joel Griffith, we focus a lot of this conversation on things like energy production and the energy sector, sustainability, that whole thing. But, you know, there are other issues in ESG, including diversity in the, you know, C-suite kind of a thing. And study after study after study has shown that having more diversity in the C-suite is positive for the bottom line of a company. You're not talking about that kind of stuff, or does that not matter, or what?
Oh, well, you're very right. ESG is the three letters, right? Environmental for E, S for social, and
G for governance.
Well, this is very Very important concerns. In addition to the E concern, now look at what happened once again. I'll take you back to Silicon Valley Bank that went bankrupt. This was one of the most woke banks in the existence of our country. And by that, I mean, look at where they spent close to $100 million on funding Black Lives Matter. Now, we all have different opinions on that. I lived in Washington, D.C. at the time and actually endured a lot of the negative consequences of people that were involved with that movement. But that aside, that bank was gave away nearly $100 million to a political, a radical left-wing political movement.
In your opinion, go ahead. Yeah.
If you're running one of these publicly traded companies, we need to ask, is that really in the shareholders' best interest to be moving forward a political philosophy?
Joel Griffith, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Joel Griffith is a research fellow at the Thomas A. Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies at the conservative think tank Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.